Good morning, colleagues. We are continuing a series of press conferences on the eve of the General Annual Shareholders Meeting. During the previous briefings, we already spoke about the work done by the company in the power sector, about what it does in the domestic industry and its operations. Today we will be talking about the exports and increasing the reliability of the exports of gas into Europe. This conference is being attended by the Deputy Chairman of the Management Board, Alexander Medvedev, Head of the Department, Pavel Odorov, and the General Director of Gazprom Exports Company, Elena Burmistrova. And I would like to draw your attention, colleagues, that this press conference dedicated to the Eastern projects, including the exports projects, it will be taking place on Thursday. So in as far as the questions are concerned about the specific countries, please keep them until the day after tomorrow. Now let me give the microphone to Alexander Ivanovich, and we will then have the Q&A. Good morning, dear colleagues. Apparently the St. Petersburg Forum has diverted so much attention quite appropriately that the current turnout in this audience quantitatively is less than usual, but that will make it possible for those who are here to make most of the time in order to ask questions and prepare interesting materials. So I suggest that we should do our work in such a way so as to focus upon the questions, but nevertheless, in the beginning, I cannot but state that last year was a record year in our history. We exported the record 179.3 billion cubic meters, which is the volume which includes Gazprom exports contracts worth 178.3 billion, and 1 billion cubic meters was exported by Gazprom Schweiz AG. Apart from it, throughout the whole Gazprom group, and this is the data based on the IFRS reporting, which is already released, we exported 228.3 billion cubic meters. This volume includes the exports by our subsidiaries and the volumes which we had received from third parties, including the tradable physical volume. But one could become complacent with the results of last year's, but because 2017 began in a very impressive way, the new daily records were set, and we are ahead of our export scheduled by 9.5 billion cubic meters. And considering last year's schedule, we are ahead by 8.5 billion, which produces a very good chance, if one is to act in a very cautious, optimistic way. Today one may say that the level of 178 billion cubic meters is something that we will definitely be able to exceed, and a new record may be achieved. Now, what is behind these assumptions? I mean that there is an active gas injection into the underground storages by ourselves and our counterparties, because the level of gas reserves in the European underground storages turned out to be the lowest during the past 10-15 years, and to ensure the security of supplies during the autumn-winter season, and overall there are certain requirements in Europe in terms of the way the underground storages are to be filled. And so in May and in the beginning of June, we are operating like in winter, like in one famous joke. It's a bad summer out there, but we got a very good one, although because we are working under the winter conditions, although it could have been definitely preferable to have a warmer weather, including in St. Petersburg. But there is a range of factors behind these figures, including a short-term factor of climate, and as the result, the underground storage is also being brought forward as a factor. But there are short-term and long-term factors, which is the alterations in the energy consumption pattern in Europe. And a positive example is in the kind of actions undertook by the UK government, which not only announced a stage by stage closure of coal-based generation, but also undertook economically simple measures which have been known since the Roman Club times, that introducing a tax upon this or that kind of a perimeter, you can achieve a certain economic result in changing the energy balance. And so effectively, the UK energy balance turned upside down from feet over to the head, rather the other way around. Within a short period of time, 3 years, and gas is going to have a dominant position right now. I had a chance to speak to a number of senior UK corporate executives who are admitting that in the very near future they will require additional imports, which not only will call for the changing demand structure, but also the production decline in the fields which used to be the foundation of the gas consumption in the past, and which continue to remain so for some time to come. But regrettably, in the continental Europe, in terms of a consistent energy policy, we don't see it there. And an ever-increasing number of political leaders at the country level, and I would even say at the European Commission level, are thinking that it's enough to play games with appealing slogans, because the amount of money that has to be paid for by the local consumers is adding up to billions of dollars, and I would say in aggregation even more. So natural gas has a very good future, and I would say that exclusively looking at the economic environment, we are able to work on our infrastructure projects in order to be in a position to meet the demand within our currently operating contracts. And let me remind you that at the level of take or pay, we have more than 4 trillion cubic meters of gas already contracted. But if one is to look into the future of the demand, it may turn out that even with the Nord Stream 2 project being commissioned in 2 lines of the Turkish streams, the gap between the demand and supply is not going to be covered. And whenever somebody is saying that, how come? What about the regasification facilities, which are currently loaded at a very low level, at just about 25%? So the mechanics of the way the regas terminals operate and the subsequent distribution of gas does not call for a 100% utilization of these capacities. Moreover, in order for the regas capacities to operate in an optimum way, their loading should not exceed 75%. So even if one assumes that the filling of underground storages will reach those 70%, still the issue of how one should meet the growing demand remains an open issue. And in terms of the competitive environment, we are not limited in our abilities. Over 100 billion of operating capacities which we may commission into an operation by simply turning the valve is something that we do have in our possession, and the center of our gas production is being shifted towards Yamal Peninsula, where simple economic estimations do demonstrate in order to be able to deliver gas to our consumers, to our users, the new route, which is the North Corridor, based on the existing estimates, provides us with the savings on transportation in the amount of $50-$60, which is a very substantive figure, because if we take the export price, I mean, the projected price is going to be about $180 plus maybe a couple or 3 more dollars will be added to this. So if we are to exclude the export duty and look at the revenue stream, you will see that $50-$60 is almost half of this component, which means that the saving, and as a result, the competitive advantage through that particular route is of a substantive nature. But at the same time, one shouldn't close eyes at the safety and security of transit, because we were suffering, honestly, I would say, in both 2006 and 2008, and just to risk our business positions is something that we are not intending to. Therefore, speaking about the Far East and the Asia-Pacific regions and about our traditional markets in Europe, I would like to emphasize that we are looking into the past with confidence. We are confident in the economic viability of our projects. The Nord Stream is following its schedule. The Turkish Stream is already being built. The pipe layers are out there. And yesterday, the importance of implementing Turkish Stream was underscored in the telephone conversation between Turkish President and President Putin. So this project is following the schedule, as well as the documents which had been signed and during the St. Petersburg Economic Forum do point to a very strong interest in this project being implemented. So myself and my colleagues are ready to answer your questions, and let me now act as the moderator and direct the questions depending upon who I believe will give you the best answer. All right, so let's switch to Q&A. TASS Agency, good morning. Alexander Ivanovich, Evgeny Sokolov from TASS News Agency. I would like to speak on the current very important issue, the severance of diplomatic relations between Qatar and the Arab countries. Could you possibly assess the way this event might affect the LNG markets and how the supplies from this country could be affected, and whether this might, if at all, influence the gas prices? And will you be reconsidering your outlook for the gas price for this year, which, if I recall, was $180, $190? Whatever occurred in diplomatic relations between Qatar and the neighboring countries, and actually this is not the first time it is happening, because there was once a period whereby diplomatic relations were severed, but within the same year, I think it was in November of the same year, they were re-established. The Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Lavrov, said that these political relations between the countries in questions are their internal affair, although Qatar is not an oil exporter, but a gas exporter. To rule completely out the possibility that an escalation of such events may lead to there being problems with the export of the Qatar LNG is something that one should not exclude. Now, whether it will happen or not, we do not know. Well, but whenever the market is being shocked because of different reasons, this is of interest to the currency and commodity speculators who make money off the instability in the market. We definitely would prefer to see a predictable picture, so let's observe it. I'm not an astrologist to be able to say what this whole situation would end up in. We'll need to wait. More questions, please. Vedomosti newspaper. Now, in light of these events, have you reconsidered your outlook for the export of gas for 2017? And one other question, based on your expectations, which are the countries which might demonstrate the biggest growth? Well, you know, it's just a couple of days which have gone by. Even the politologists haven't yet come up with any analysis, and you already want us to change our outlook for volumes and prices. Well, we simply keep on working. If price grows, then that would be our advantage. If the volumes grow the same, the reserve of additional supplies of the pipeline gas is something that we do have, particularly if the PAL issue is going to be resolved, which unfortunately is being delayed somewhat. Yes, please. Let me also add, there was a question about gas consumption growth, primarily in the northwestern European countries such as Germany, Netherlands and Italy. We are expecting the demand from these countries to grow this year. Yes, please. Well, I mean, simply by which margin you expect this growth to be up, considering the weather. There are different outlooks. There is a consensus forecast which shows that Germany will add 6%. There is another forecast which shows that Netherlands will grow by 8%. But at this point in time, we have quite a conservative look at it. But nevertheless, as Mr. Medvedev mentioned in the beginning of his presentation, we are already ahead in terms of the pace of things compared to 2016. But we will see the results as time goes by. More questions, please. Interfax Agency.
Good afternoon, Alexander Ivanovich. I would like to ask the following questions. Recently, there were negotiations with Bulgaria, as far as I remember, and apparently they asked Gazprom to provide it with 15 billion cubic meters of gas. Are you ready to make this amount, this volume available, and through which pipeline connection?
Well, you know, it's been 15 years that I have been working at Gazprom. And to start with, I know I had a big shelf in my office upon which I would put the request for the acquisition of gas, which minimally will start from 10 billion. And so during these 15 years, this very spacious shelf is all has been all filled up with these files, and so I had to really dispose of them because they were all similar in terms of the contents. Just a few marker words enabled me to quickly decide about these requests going into the bin. I participated myself in these meetings. No requests were received for 15 billion. The current amount, the volume of the Bulgarian market is well known. And although the potential for gasification in Bulgaria is there, and we in our time were actively involved in attempts to gasify Bulgaria and even the gas distribution capacities which we participated in developing, make it possible to do 350, 400 million cubic meters of gas a year. But as opposed to Turkey, you know, gasification was really going at high speed, and even during the high price environment continues to develop. So now, against the backdrop of low prices, and despite the lack of other energy sources into Bulgaria, the level which used to be there during the Soviet Union days, and no more nor less, they had about 7 billion cubic meters of gas of being consumed a year. So currently, it doesn't exceed 3 billion. So, in order to be able to resell gas, we have our own marketing and trading divisions, two companies, GMT and WindGas, which are successfully operating in Europe. We do not need go-betweens to resell our gas. We are able to do it ourselves quite well.
RIA Novosti, Maria Gordieva from RIA Novosti Energy Agency. To further continue this topic, the Bulgarian media today wrote that Bulgaria, in the course of negotiations during the St. Petersburg Forum, raised the issue of, again, the construction of the South Stream, because they describe it today as South Stream 2, of possibly lower capacity. Are there such negotiations are underway about any new capacities being built to further extend the Turkish Stream, maybe?
Well, you know, I am not going to disclose details because we began working with our Bulgarian counterparts. I would simply remind you of the history. In terms of the start of the construction of the South Stream towards Bulgaria was in place. Everything was in place. Pipes, the pipe layers. The European Commission was saying that one should debate the issue of access to capacities, but nobody really brought up the issue in terms of that the project should not be built. And then Bulgaria decided, under some coercion, to block the development of this project. And if you recall, we officially closed this project. And although they say that It's impossible to ford the same river twice, but you can try and go along the flow in a different way. So the possibilities of the distribution of the gas from the second line of the Turkish stream are quite diverse, including, apart from the Italian destination, there is another destination northward, in order to discuss how one could meet the needs of every country in terms of the additional transport capacities. So that is why, with our Bulgarian colleagues, we are discussing the possibility of the development of the gas transportation system in Bulgaria. And I underscore that this is the topic that we are talking about. Vitaly Sokolov from LNG Intelligence, again, in continuation of the Bulgarian topic. In St. Petersburg, Gazprom signed an agreement on Poseidon project, which clearly is going to be the extension of the Turkish stream into first Greece and then to Italy. Now, you are saying that you continue discussions with the Bulgarian counterparts. Do these options exclude each other, or there could be two extensions of the Turkish stream towards the European destinations? Another question, what is the probability of the Turkish stream being connected to the Dutch project? Because there came up some news that the Snam Italian company is suggesting that you should connect Turkish stream to TAB, and other shareholders and Luxus are somewhat seemingly not against it. So what do you think about it? And if I may, a very short question about the Nord Stream 2. Brussels wants to halt negotiations about a special legal regime for Nord Stream 2. Will Gazprom agree to that? Well, with respect to Poseidon and TAB, the situation whereby the pipe built is going to stay empty is unnatural. So theoretically, and I would like to emphasize it again, theoretically, the execution of Poseidon as a project could be a possibility to utilize the TAP pipeline capacities. But under no circumstances we are going to act as those who are begging this to happen, because the owners of TAP pipeline should be having a headache about it, because the source of supplies, as was previously considered, and you may read from the open media the situation currently unfolding in the Azerbaijan's energy industry, i.e. that under current situation in Azerbaijan, there are growing needs for the gas to be reinjected into the reservoir in order to support the oil extraction from the main Azerbaijan fields. And this is no joke. This is not an issue of a choice. It's just the issue of an urgent need, because oil is the main source of the government revenue for the Azerbaijan economics. We've been through similar kind of situations in other countries where one has to make a choice between what to do, to reduce oil production or produce gas, to sell it in the open market. So this is the matter of choice by the Azerbaijan. And so if in this kind of a setting the TAP capacities end up being empty, again, this will be the choice to be made by the TAP participants, whether to keep the pipeline empty or to try and reach some kind of a mutual understanding, for example, with us. So theory is theory, but what do we do actually is a different thing. And we effectively are open to any possible development of business cooperation in Europe, and we believe that cooperation could be an ideal thing, but we're not intending to force anybody into doing anything. Thank you. And about the Nord Stream 2? Well, you see, this legal collision has been going on for more than 1 year. There is a legal review in place to the extent that the norms of the third package, the third energy package by the European Union, cannot be applied to the marine section of the Nord Stream 2. Like, they couldn't have been applied to Nord Stream 1. So right now, it is hard to understand what are the considerations amongst those who are saying, no, first let's receive mandate to hold negotiations, hard to understand with who, Russia or Gazprom, in order to extend the principles of the Energy Charter of the European Union and impose them upon the Nord Stream 2 project. I mean, we act on an assumption that the principles of the market economy should continue working in Europe, or the European Commission wants to start acting in the role of the State Planning Committee from the Soviet Union. Well, I hope that common sense would prevail and there is no need to discuss anything, because in terms of the mainland part of the pipeline, we have accepted all the norms of the European Commission, and moreover, the land part of the project is being done in full compliance with the regulations. So, honestly, I do not see any reason whatsoever to discuss this topic. The European Commission should rather be dealing with the energy policy issues. This would have been much more beneficial. Yes, please. Anadolu Agency from Turkey. My first question is going to be about the gas discount for Turkey. I don't know. I think this has been the topic for the past 3 years, but we haven't seen any results yet. So how do you assess these negotiations? When are we going to see any results? And my second question is about the Qatar crisis of yesterday. So what do you think about the future of the global gas market in light of this crisis? Well, you know, it's a long, long story. Principally speaking, sometimes the price negotiations can run for a much longer time. But in this case, we began negotiating in a very high price environment. Currently, we are living through the low price environment, so it's about time to talk not about the discount, but rather about the markups. And Elena Viktorovna, next to me, she is continuously in contact with the Botash and with the Ministry of Energy. And quite recently, I visited Turkey myself. So we have defined our positions, and I, honestly speaking, always prefer to resolve matters not through arbitration, although some may think that arbitration may produce better results. But this is not the first time when we were in a situation when arbitration would pass the ruling which would provide our foreign partners much worse kind of a result than we had been proposing during the negotiating stage. So I hope that the joint implementation of the Turkish Stream project, amongst other things, will help us resolve our commercial issues. Second question about the future of the global market. Well, with respect to Qatar, well, I believe that we should wait, because it is quite difficult at this point in time to be able to see how these events may unfold into the future, because so far we simply see various restrictions imposed upon the aviation and in terms of the way goods are flowing, including the food. So it is quite difficult to predict. The amount of Qatar export is huge into the LNG market, and so if some problems may arise there, this may certainly lead to extremely negative consequences for pricing, because one way or another may be not for Europe but for Asia. The Qatar LNG is of strong significance, but the European market nevertheless remains separated from the Asian and from the North American market, and so if there is any effect, it will be there, but not of a catastrophic nature. More questions, please. Plants, please.
Good afternoon. Please allow me, before I raise my questions, I would revisit my colleague's question about Poseidon. You signed an agreement with DPE Addison. Have there been any understanding reached about when the deliveries may start and the volumes? And my own question is about the Stockholm arbitration decision. You have had time, which was to assess this judgment, which was not in favor of Gazprom. To what extent it may be detrimental to the company, what kind of steps you intend to undertake, and further on, how Gazprom is intending to maintain its shipments through Ukraine, because Gazprom used to say that it will continue using this particular route in terms of some volumes.
Well, our agreements about Poseidon are far from us being able to determine the time when shipments will start. All of our projects are aiming at one date, which is 2020, the start of the beginning of 2020. Now, reminiscing about a question which one American reporter asked me, I want to ask you in return. Did you read through the Stockholm arbitration ruling to be able to so confidently say that it is not in our favor? No, you did not. Well, I did. So, in any case, the balance in that ruling for Gazprom is positive, even at the preliminary stage. Now, the volume of this balance will be determined based on the results of the final arbitration ruling. So, there's just one issue that is in question here, that the arbitration ruling overruled take-or-pay. It is not correct. It did not rule it out. I'm not going to be telling you what exactly is there, but there is no ruling out of take-or-pay. So this public manipulation is, work is underway. We are always respecting the arbitration rulings, have always been respectful of them. And there is time to engage in a preliminary discussion of this preliminary ruling, and I believe that the Ukrainian side will offer certain comments. So the balance will be defined based on the final ruling. But since somebody is beating oneself in the chest, I mean the Ukrainian representatives, I will quietly tell you that the balance is in favor of Gazprom. What was it? And what about the shipments past 2019 through Ukraine? Well, you see, we are ready to enter into negotiations, and we invite our Ukrainian counterparts to come visit us, because they are providing services, and there is nothing evil, no evil intention in that, particularly since they have always been coming to us to discuss transit issues. In response, we received invitation, even that was before the Trump elections, to come to the United States to hold these negotiations. Maybe that is a very subtle kind of a humor. You know, it's been a long time since I've been to New York. I would enjoy, you know, going there, but not on this pretext. So the fact that certain volumes may, and I emphasize may, remain for the Ukrainian transit, it is true. But the scale of these volumes, amongst other things, will depend upon terms and conditions, which may be proposed and decreed upon with the Ukrainian side. Regrettably, the factor of technological risks, this is not something that we demonstrate. You can find it on the official European Union website that the frequency of incidents in the Ukrainian gas transportation systems, not just by a certain percentage, but by a whole margin, exceed the standard incident norm that you have in the European gas transportation system. And you can close this gap only through multi-billion investments. because to risk being able to transit, particularly through the winter period, is unacceptable. Blomberg?
Good afternoon. Further speaking about Ukraine. Speak up, please. Yes, speaking about Ukrainian topic, I would like to ask you the following thing. By the end of June, by June 30th, are you expecting the Stockholm administration to come up with a final decision? Because Naftogaz recently came out that in about 2 to 3 months, some kind of yet another final ruling is expected where all of the compensations are going to be defined. And my second question about Rosneft and its plans to achieve being granted the right of exports of Russia. What if all of a sudden you have some kind of consultations with Rosneft that Gazprom should be acting as a commission charger? I mean, specifically considering the memorandum between Rosneft and BP about the supplies of Rosneft gas as of 2019. Well, the date that you've just referred to, which is June 30th, is the date by which various comments and objections should be filed. It doesn't mean that immediately following that, final ruling is going to be passed, particularly as we know the timeframes within the arbitration process, the definitions may get delayed and rather than being brought forward. So this is not a simple issue. It requires a serious effort. As far as Rosneft is concerned, this is the kind of question which I answered on more than one occasion. If you have grown one apple and you think that you can sell it better than the one who produced 1 ton of apples and have been growing and producing that for 40 years, well, maybe you will be a master salesman selling one apple, particularly since your cost involved in producing one apple is much less than what's involved in producing 1 ton. But we have a law in place. We have the law which was modernized and which allows now the LNG exports, which thank God will start this year from the Yamal LNG project, where we act as one of the biggest buyers of this LNG. In terms of our ability to meet the needs of our consumers in Europe, we have no deficit of gas. We can immediately add 100 some billion cubic meters of gas, simply opening up the valve. So, whereas UK needs gas, we can also deliver. So you're not running the consultations to act as a kind of intermediary which will charge a commission on these services. Well, no. I mean, I was meeting with a number of senior executives in Rosneft. Nobody asked me. Maybe they believe that they shouldn't. But the most important thing is that I do not see any economic sense in this. I do not. In the first place, neither for Gazprom, but rather for Russia as the state. Reuters.
Good afternoon, Alexander Ivanovich, Reuters, Oksana Komisiva. I have several questions. The first one is about, about the European Commission undertaking various tests. It has delayed itself, but we can see in May that a number of countries have been saying that they have certain objections and certain comments. So when negotiations on this particular issue are going to come to head and there will be some sort of decisions, is it possible that Gazprom will offer certain concessions to the European Commission? This is first question. The second question about the Opal pipeline. When are you expecting access to the tendering? Are you going to initiate any litigations or
how you already done so, because in your memorandum it was said that you are initiating certain things. And the third question about funding for the Nord Stream 2. Today there was an announcement that Gazprom entered into an agreement on deficit funding post 2019. Could you explain what it means? Because what was said there, that there would be a bridge loan for €6 billion. How this particular amount of money is going to be refinanced post 2019? How much of, has Gazprom taken any obligation in order to make some part of that amount available? Will the Nord Stream itself be organizing funding in the market or not?
Well, let me begin with anti-monopoly investigation, because the market test procedure, which was announced by the European Commission, has come to an end. It has gathered a moderate number of grievances and comments. And so in the course of the meeting I had with the European Commission, we agreed on how we further are going to work with this comment, because this is the European Commission which has to make up its mind about what kind of comments are going to be accepted, to be worked on, and which are not going to be accepted. And the reason I'm saying that some may not be accepted, because principally speaking, although there has been an agreement to the extent that one should not bring this whole topic into the public space before the decision is made. But nevertheless, a number of politicians, without even mentioning the company representatives, who did not refrain, some major figures, including the president, started coming out with political statement. I mean, not political, but rather politicking statements. I.e. that no test is necessary, one should simply punish Gazprom, and again, billions of dollars and so on and so forth to destroy the gas market and turn everything upside down, as opposed to my previous example. But I'm not going to comment on politicking, but I'm very hopeful that we shall remain within the framework of this investigation, which is having very precise boundaries, well-known topics, which all have been reviewed. We we're not accepting any guilt, and we're not intending to accept any blame. We are not the kind of characters that you find in one of the Russian playwrights' play, guilty without guilt. But we decided to meet the European Commission halfway, so that the European market continues to develop, and so that the European Commission, in the person of the competition commissioner, facilitates such competition. And we, actually being the pioneers of competition in, by then, the normalized German market, sometimes, or even compared to the European Commission, more interested in having such competition develop, because we are an active market player. So we decided the way we should continue this work, and we will look at the kind of comments there are, whether they could be taken into account and accepted. So everything's going to be normal, and the work is going to be normal, at least out of what I heard. I do not see any surprises or any special situations, but the comments you see in the media by Polish, Lithuanian colleagues is something that I will leave without attention. For now, I will leave them without attention. Well, we are not going to disclose the list, because it is not clear what items, what points from this list are going to be considered. Yes, we will carry on, and so we hope that this whole thing will be finished this year. Now, about Opal pipeline, right? You know that
this case yet again demonstrates that to spite my grandma, I will freeze my ears and won't wear a hat. Because Opal plays a key role in the distribution of gas in Europe. That short period of time where we had 100% access demonstrated its effectiveness and importance of the kind of work that could be done there. But after that, and before I switch over to that topic, like Comrade Sakharov in one of the Soviet comic movies said, long live the European court, the best and the fairest in the whole world. And so the complaint was lodged with respective enforcement, which followed. And as a result, we, again, are not in the position to use Opal in a that the issue of enforcement was promised to be resolved in April and May, but it didn't happen. We were not allowed to be part of the review of that. But maybe this would sound too simple legally, but the European Commission has the representative of all nations, including Poland. And so the decision with respect to Opal, it took years to produce it, with the involvement, amongst other things, of the Polish representatives. And to the extent I know, there haven't been any negative voting in the European Commission on it. But somehow, with respect to the decision which already had been made, and following the adjusted opinion, which was different from what we agreed upon, we were able to find the way to adjust ourselves and agree to it in full compliance with all of the norms. But what I think is at stake here is the ability of the European Commission to do its work. So let us wait and see. Let's wait. Now, with respect to the Nord Stream, I would like to say that all the documents which are about the way the project is being financed have been formalized and signed. That applies to the startup funding, intermediate funding, and final funding. Now, the details of the structure will be easy to understand, but not now. But most importantly is that the project is fully supported with funds made available. We also received questions through internet, and there is a question from McKinsey whether Gazprom Export is intending to increase its sales of gas through the 2017 auction. Well, I suggest that Mrs. Burmistrova should answer this question on behalf of Gazprom Export. As may be known to you, in 2016 we held 2.5, almost 3 tenders, which demonstrated the being effective, and amongst other things we can judge that by the statistics which have been mentioned here. 178.3 billion is a record amount of Gazprom's supplies throughout the whole history of the company. Now, speaking about the gas auctions planned for 2018 or in the current year of 2017, we do not exclude the possibility of them being held, but as of today, I can hardly be in a position to give you the exact date, because it's definitely going to be close to the fall-winter season, because in the meantime, we are running ahead of the schedule. And so our overall strategy for 2017, in case there's a need to hold additional volumes put through the auctions, will point to whether there is really a need to do so. Thank you very much. Any questions additionally? RBK agency, please. Good afternoon. I would like to turn our attention towards the Middle East. What is your opinion about the future of the supplies of gas to India, for example, from Iran or from Russia? What kind of route do you see as the possible priority? And so in case of Iran, recently there was an announcement about an agreement being signed about Farsad Bay. What share of it is the interest of Gazprom, and what would be the profitability level that you could be find acceptable with respect to those particular projects and contracts? Well, it seems to me that one should better consider Iran as part of the Asia-Pacific destinations. Iran and Asia, you know, how did you learn your geography?
how do you find the India not being Asia? Well, all right, without leaving you without an answer, I will simply tell you that a great number of options were being considered in terms of the way the pipeline gas could be shipped towards India, with a potential involvement not only of Iran and Russia, but also some third countries. So the number of such options in a considerable way has been narrowed, something that doesn't fit in terms of the economics was excluded, but are the options which could produce an acceptable economic result in terms of the end price of gas in the market. These options remain and will be the subject of additional discussion. It is clear that the potential for optimizing is definitely in the swapping operations with several countries being part of the whole arrangement, considering the kind of supplies which could be organized in the immediate future. Now, the fact that India is a potentially big market can be easily understood simply by recalling upon what Prime Minister of India mentioned several times, that there is 1,250,000,000 in terms of the population with a kind of a consumption model which is characterized by excessive use of gas. But what you've just asked about, that will be the topic of our discussion the day after tomorrow, during the next briefing. More questions, please. Yaroslav Krysky, Slovakia. Alexander Ivanovich, some time ago when we had a meeting, you mentioned that the gas deliveries may be taking place through Slovakia post-2019. I mean, the kind of gas which is going to be going through Nord Stream 2. Is there any news about this particular aspect from the point of view of the volumes? Well, I mean, say that most importantly, is there no bad news that all of the agreements that we're able to reach with our Slovakian colleagues are still in effect, and they are of a binding nature. And the fact that the gas will pass through Slovakia is something that I have no slightest doubt about. Dear colleagues, we've been working for almost 1 hour now. Are there any questions still left? 1, 2, 4, 5? Yeah, 5 questions. All right, a very good figure. No, 6 is a bad figure. No, 5 is a good one. Yeah, let's keep 5. Alexander Ivanovich, I would like to go back to the South Stream project, which was closed because you are in court with Saipem and there was a counter suit filed. Why the decision was made so, whereas in the past you were talking about the out-of-court settlement and by also choosing this company as a contractor for other projects. Well, you know, the internal kitchen in terms of the arbitration process is something that is not common to disclose. Whatever there is so far. We haven't identified such possible ways out of it, if you recall. Like somebody says, you know, in that same movie I quoted, either I am taking her to register our marriage into the city council, or she's taking me to the general prosecutor's office. So it's still underway. Alexander Ivanovich, a question from Vedomosti. Not so long ago, there was this situation in Ukraine about the gas transit. So what is your attitude, with respect to the arrested shares? Are there any levers left for you to defend your rights, and within which period of time you intend to do so? Thank you. Well, you know, Ukraine hasn't described Kafka as a Ukrainian writer, although I don't exclude that this might happen. But whatever the Ukrainian side does, they are of extremely Kafkian kind of nature, because if you read attentively, Gazprom was accused of a monopoly interference in a situation where we are not the kind of company which is receiving, it's not the company which is providing services, but rather is a recipient of services. So no matter what kind of rationale you apply, and no matter what kind of geometry you apply here, that of the Pythagore or Lobachevsky, I am at a loss to try and apply some kind of common sense, even if I put myself into the Ukrainian shoes, because that was not the end of it. There was a fine issued in billions of US dollars, which is hard to really understand how it was calculated in the first place. And now they're trying to look for ways about to monetize this fine, despite the fact that when I had a meeting with Mr. Shevchevich in Brussels and the energy minister of Ukraine, they cried out loud that no matter, that in terms of any activities which may impose risk upon the Russian gas transit route are not going to be undertaken. But if they believe that this particular risk is only related to the confiscation of gas, and that one unceremoniously may snatch assets from the company which has been operating for more than one decade and which was providing considerable amounts of transit volumes to southern destinations, including the underwater passage under the Danube, this is absolutely irresponsible. And moreover, this doesn't correspond to the promises which had been offered. So we are going to undertake whatever is necessary to do in order for both Europe to see what is really going on and so that the appetite on the part of some to act in such way should disappear. Because, you know, there has been a statement made that, you know, we've been racking through and through in terms of trying to find Gazprom assets in Ukraine. We couldn't find any, so now we're going to start looking out in Europe. You know, I don't quote any Ukrainian or Russian writers in this particular case, although I could, but many quotes which I would prefer to quote contain a lot of four-letter words, so let me not do that. Interfax. Alexander Ivanovich, I have a few more questions to ask, if I may. There's one question about Turkey. Recently there was an information out that you are selling gas through Bosphorus, and do you already have any potential buyers for that particular asset? The next question is, could you comment on the following? Recently, the Gazprom's Department 310 was vested with the functions of acting as a dispatcher for the Russian gas shipments to Europe. Could you comment how effective they are in coping with this assignment? And could you also describe the Strela, the Arrow project? What are its purposes? What are the stages that it is supposed to go through? How many people have been laid off? You mean how many have been hired? I mean, no. How many people have been dismissed or hired? Could you please tell us that? And what are the indicators that this project has in to demonstrate its efficiency? And the last question, about a year ago, you were telling us about the stages and the aims of integrating wind gas into Gazprom, because some of the wind gas subsidiaries are already working under the Gazprom brand. Now, my question is, now 1 year over, can you share any information about the way the wind gas has been integrated into Gazprom? And the first question, what was it? Is selling gas through wind gas, do you do it? And how many buyers do you have it in Turkish destinations? Well, you know, the events in the Turkish market are of some difficult nature, complex nature, amongst other things because of the economic environment in Turkey itself, because the recent political events that have very strongly affected the Turkish lira exchange rate. Apart from it, prices remain regulated, there is a subsidization mechanism in place for the gas which Bortash is selling. So effectively, in terms of a free market, despite the fact that the law on gas was adopted, is something that you cannot describe, and it hasn't been, and it is not there. So, and because of that,
particularly considering the kind of activities which are undertaken together with other private Turkish companies. We started looking into the possibility, maybe at the current stage, to divest from that asset based on economic considerations and also because of the considerations of uncertainties. But that doesn't affect our relations with the Turkish partners. We were the only company which, you know, pledged part of its volumes to private buyers, which definitely played up to the development of the market. But in terms of who ends up being the final owner is something that we need to wait and see. There are certain rules of the way this is done, so it's premature yet to speak about it. Now, in terms of dispatching, question, your information is not very correct. The Department 310, like it, as it used to be, it continues to play a certain role and is an actor. So just to say that the Gazprom has been included from it, no, it's not the case. So I would ask Mrs. Dmitrieva to add additional comment. Yeah, I would say that this is the question should be directed towards the chairman of the management board of Gazprom, signed the order on a temporary reglement of the way the applications are to be confirmed, the application from the buyers. Previously, this function was performed by Gazprom Export. Right now, we do it together with Department 310. This is the central dispatch office. But in terms of its essentials, the mechanism didn't change. But of course, whenever we supply gas from the West Siberian fields to Europe, then there's a natural wish to fully understand the way this process works and understand how every single compressor station operates. In Gazprom Exports, on the contrary, yesterday, there was a decree signed, the order signed, on hiring additional personnel which will work together with Department 310 doing this particular work. And certainly, these kind of internal changes in no way affected neither the volumes nor the quality of the supplies of gas to the European consumers, which is the most important case in what we do. Moreover, there is a very simple purpose to it, so that the gas transportation system operation in the territory of Russia and managing exports could be optimized, and we have capacities to optimize it. And specifically from this point of view, certain additional functions were vested into the Department 310. Now, it was about the Arrow project, Strela. I think there is a fairy tale when a young knight shot an arrow. He comes and sees that right next to the arrow, there is a frog sitting. And there was a subsequent story unfolding, a very nice name to it, the Arrow. So the integration of the foreign operations is a logical thing to do at this stage of our development, particularly since we have two very powerful subsidiaries which are in 100% ownership in UK and in Germany, with their specificities and with the specialties in their trading and marketing operations. Likewise, now, what will be the final configuration of this arrow and who the frog will turn into, the one which catches this arrow, you will learn soon about it. Oh, branding, yeah. I would say that Gazprom brand is well-reputable and broadly recognized, and it is no accident that we invest into promoting this brand through different ways and means, including through sports activities. The WinGas brand was well-known as part of our joint venture with Wintershall, so our core approach is that in Europe we're going to be operating under Gazprom brand, and that is what we're going to achieve. But in terms of when rebranding will be taking place in which cases, that is would be decided on a case-by-case basis.
Alexander Ivanovich, my question is also about the Nord Stream 2. There are five European companies which agreed to fund almost half of the cost involved in this project, while Gazprom remains 100% owner of the stock of the company. So what are the conditions that the European companies agreed to do this funding? Is there any agreement behind it? And my second question about the Baltic LNG. Recently, an announcement was made about this particular terminal commissioning being delayed. And during St. Petersburg, you signed agreement with Shell. So what was the reason behind this delay and at what stage the project is currently at? Yes, you very correctly noted that in the Nord Stream 2, amongst the Nord Stream 2 shareholders, there are no foreign shareholders. And that is why this project is being done on the basis of a financing arrangement in which foreign colleagues took on certain obligations, and all these obligations have been very specifically defined, and so the funding is currently being made available. Now, in terms of the way it will develop, it is difficult to predict. Right, so a Nord Stream 2 AG is the entity behind funding, where the general director, being in the capacity of the general director, very successfully executed the Nord Stream 1. And the chairman of the board is the very same person, Mr. Gerhard Schröder. Now, with respect to the Baltic LNG, the project is moving into a very important phase. It is moving into the phase of a joint investment validation, where respective technological decisions are going to be made to further move the project into the design stage. And the project does possess very evident advantages in terms of it not being linked to any specific field. And so it means that the question of its competitiveness, particularly bearing in mind the reduction of the average costs, which have already been achieved and will further be worked on, make this project not only competitive compared to very dear Australian project, but I'm sure that it will be able to compete very easily with American projects. So this undertaking will provide us with additional flexibility in our operation in the market, and it is easy to see what they are, because the demand is building up, and very soon we will be putting our efforts into the marketing work. And this is not a new project, because this is the project which we have been discussing for quite some time now. And so the experience of the past period is being fully applied to it, so I am confident that this project will happen. 2023. It is worthwhile adding that the delay comes from the current market environment, and that specifically demonstrates that Gazprom annually adjusts its strategy depending upon what is happening in the market. Well, thank you very much. And now the final questions. Yevstole Taranda, Yamal Region publication. My question is to Mr. Medvedev. You mentioned in passing the export of the liquefied natural gas. So could you tell us the details about this issue and what is happening right now? Could you quote any figures to us, please? The exports of liquefied natural gas from Yamal. Oh, you're from Yamal. Oh, from Yamal. I mean, Yamal LNG. From the information received from our colleagues from Novatek and Total, it is Q4 this year that the schedule shows the project to achieve its design capacity of 10 million tons. And we have a contract for 2 million tons. I mean, not
Yeah, with the possibility to increase it to 2.5. Yeah, we've got a contract with Imal LNG for 2 million tonnes, with the possibility to increase that to 2.5 million tonnes. Now, between which contracts? I mean, the first LNG is going to be allocated. This is yet the subject of a discussion. And so this window is going to be narrowing. So the date when the shipments will start towards us, this date is going to be defined very soon. I wouldn't even say before the end of this year. What? A year, yes. With a ramp up to a plateau level. What? We haven't yet defined it. It will be a joint decision between Yamal LNG and Gazprom Exports. Well, dear colleagues, I would like to thank you for your questions, and now get ready for Thursday's briefing. Thank you very much.